Hi, Mason. It's Friday, and this is The Friday Show. It's been quite a week in City World, and joining me to look backwards at a Champions League quarterfinal second leg and look forward to an FA Cup semi-final, I've got the trusted Friday Show duo of Lloyd and George. Afternoon, George.
Good afternoon, Mason. How are you getting on?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. How are you doing in the rain?
I'm all right. I'm looking after my family's dog today. So I've dodged it today so far. We've been pretty good tactically, but I'm really worried about the evening session. I think that's where I'm going to come up short and get lashed down on. But other than that, yeah, all groovy.
Excellent. Lloyd, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. Still in Manchester after coming up for the game. It's just a reminder of how much it rains there. I mean, I feel like my childhood was defined by getting pissed on walking to school.
Yeah.
And it does rain less in London. Yeah, it does.
I had a friend stay with me this week. She's originally from Oldham and she said exactly the same thing. She lives in London now. And she said, whenever I go up to Manchester, the thing I'm very quickly reminded about is how much it rains up there in comparison to London. So, yeah. I can relate. I've got a hard relate because I was there last week, so I know exactly what that feeling of being soaked to the bone at 10 a.m. and wondering who turned the shower on outside. I know exactly what that feeling is like. Okay, so I want to dive straight in because obviously we played Real Madrid on Wednesday night and went out on penalties. George, I've not spoken to you. How are you feeling?
Well, you know what? I'm feeling all right. You know, I've had a couple of days to digest it now. Finally looked back on the match this morning. I didn't really want to yesterday. Listen to the preview pod as well. And, you know, you guys were all very measured and I think I share that sentiment really. Obviously it's bitterly disappointing to go out on penners, no matter, you know, the occasion, the stakes, everything. It's always a really frustrating way to lose. And I was confident going into the match, considering it was Real Madrid in the Champions League quarterfinal. During the 90 minutes, I was confident even when we were behind and chasing the game. In extra time, I was confident. But then as soon as the ref blew for the penalties, I just had this little feeling in my stomach. And I wasn't confident at all. Just as you guys alluded to in the preview, with the players that we'd brought off who would have definitely been taking the penners, all those things considered, and the fact that I felt like Madrid were playing for it, I just felt like the mental swing went in their favour as soon as the ref blew for the penners. But we've had much more disappointing exits from this tournament, and we've also always been kicked out when we've never won it before. So this feeling I can take compared to others.
Like, did you see what Carlo Ancelotti said about kind of defending the way that they played by saying it's literally the only way to play against this team? Do you agree with him? And in general, the approach that Madrid took, do you respect it?
No, not really. But it's effective, isn't it? You know, it's something that Madrid have done down the years. You know, Howard termed them the cockroaches of the Champions League. I think that's very apt. But it's not the only way to play against City. I think lots of teams actually this season have had success against City by attacking us and, you know, putting us under pressure and trying to win the ball high up and, you know, coming at us. Look at the Chelsea games, you know, look at Spurs. You know, Liverpool have obviously had success down the years kind of going at City. I think there's been a little bit of a sea change in the Premier League this season. It does feel like teams have come at us a little bit more. Obviously, we still play against a lot of low blocks. But no, I don't massively respect it. But, you know, it is Ancelotti and any team's prerogative to play however they want. You know, we saw Arsenal play really reductively in the game at the Etihad. And I think, you know, that to me, I said that straight away. We did it on the review. I thought that was the wrong move because of the context of the season, the fact they needed to kind of land a blow. But in a cup game like that, you know, when you're kind of rolling with the punches, it's only a couple of things to go your way, like it did, you know, De Bruyne skies it, Foden miskicks it, and you get over the line on pens.
George, kind of taking that point of view that, you know, obviously they played in such a reductive fashion that it could have been anybody. And obviously this is a hindsight question, but in hindsight, do you think that Guardiola would do anything differently in terms of the way that he set his own team up?
I think he might be. Obviously, he's incessant in the way he studies teams and some of the preparation. So all of the games he's watched Madrid play in the league, they'll never play like that, really. And even at the Bernabeu in the first leg, they didn't play like they did on Wednesday night. So I don't think he was probably fully prepared for how much they were willing to let us have the ball and how deep they were going to sit for pretty much, you know, the entire match. So I think he would have maybe rather going for control than aggression towards the end. I think he would have probably would go aggression first and then control in the end, because you think you're at home, start fast, start hard, try and get in front, make them chase it, and then, you know, then when you get down the stretch, if you have a lead, then you can bring players on who will just keep the ball all day, and then we can just keep passing it around with possession and try and see out the game in the way that we often do. So I think he would, you know, tweak a few little things, to be honest.
Lloyd, same question for you.
No, actually, I'm going to stick with what I said on the review. I think that was the right team. If I would have changed anyone, it would have been Bernardo rather than Grealish. I just think we should have done more with the 11 on the pitch in the first half, and I think the approach was too timid, and I think that does come from the coach as well as the individual players, to be honest. Yeah. So no, I would stick with the team. I'd just expect a better performance.
Yeah, I think I'll land closer to George's side of the fence on this. I think that the reality is that when a team plays like that, it can be anybody. It may as well be Stoke. It may as well be, you know,
Celtic,
Everton. Yeah, exactly. Just it could be Sean Dyche's Everton for want of a better kind of negative team. And I think that if you are tasked with breaking down Sean Dyche's Everton, you're just not picking that team, and you're not picking those players in those positions, and you're not asking those players to do what they did. I think that a little bit, my take on it, and it's kind of been a theme with Pep down the years for me, is that Pep, for better or for worse, will often play the reputation of the team rather than the team itself and how good they actually are. I think you've seen it in kind of some derbies where he's been a bit conservative in his selection, or certainly Liverpool down the years where, you know, maybe when Liverpool were in a bad moment last year, we picked a very conservative and negative team. And I'm not saying that the team on Wednesday was negative, but I do think that it landed on the conservative side. And then the other, I guess, tiny hint of regret for me now, a couple of days later, is he could probably have done the Foden-Bernardo swap 15 minutes into the game, because you don't need to make a substitution there. Yeah. You just need to tell two players to swap positions. And we saw in the second half how much more aggressive we got when Phil moved into the middle. Obviously, Doku coming on had an impact on that as well. But yeah, in the main, that's a little bit the kind of hindsight-y regret that I've got. But also, you know, with the chances we have, we should probably win it. Like Lloyd says, I think with the players that were on the pitch, there's no reason why they themselves can't be a little bit more aggressive in what they're doing. I think Madrid were incredibly lucky. I mean, I think that in the immediate aftermath of the game, simply because we'd lost, I gave them a lot of credit. But I mean, watched extended highlights again, little bit thought about it. I view it slightly differently now. I think they just fluked it. I think, you know, you repeat that game again, nine times out of 10, City win it comfortably. And so there's little that Madrid can take from that beyond, hey, look, we can play like Everton. We can stick 11 behind the ball and hoof it into channels. And we've got a sprinter who can try and sprint and get onto the end of it. They played almost no football. So fuck them. Okay. Anything else that either of you two want to pick up on before I move this forward?
Yeah, I just think, again, going over about us being kind of too cautious and maybe respecting the occasion a little too much is, I think the fact that we weren't as decisive as we could be and weren't really going for the jugular quickly, and especially in the first half, it allowed them to adjust in game, like slowly. Like as soon as Carvajal gets the yellow card, they should be making sure the next couple of runs you're just going at him. Doesn't really matter what happens, just make him panic and stuff. But they didn't test him out properly for a bit, and then by the time they started to do that, Ancelotti had tweaked the team. So essentially, Valverde was playing right wing back and was doing all the defensive cover, and you know, jockeying Grealish and so on. So I just think, you know, we can never complain about Pep for all he's done. But the tweaks and the unwillingness to change things in games sometimes is a frustrating point for me. And happens with the subs sometimes in second half of games. But and sometimes just sticking to the plan too much. I know it's because he has this philosophy and ethos that he believes in. But just I think a few little tweaks in that first half, we really could have gone for the jugular and you know, put the game out of sight, which is frustrating. But credit to, you know, Ancelotti for recognising a few points of weakness and, you know, adapting in game as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think also the Madrid players reacted to the game state throughout the two legs much better than we did. I think that we're not in Madrid when we're in the lead, we're not composed enough. The simple stuff to control the game, which when City, when they're winning generally, is when we find it easiest to control a game. I think we a little bit struggled in Madrid to control the game, and I think it just came down to players not handling the game state, because if you're giving away simple 5-yard passes and you're a City player, any City player, then you're just not handling the game state, because that's something that you do for fun all day, every day, every game week. So I think over the two legs, they handled the relative game states a little bit better than us. And then I think the final, I would say the last 15 minutes of normal time on Wednesday and the extra time, Madrid just grew in confidence. It just felt as though City were dominant in terms of possession of the ball and touches inside the penalty area, didn't really, there's the De Bruyne chance in the 80 whateverth minute it was, and then there's a Foden chance in the first half of extra time, but outside of that, it's not really like we were carving them open and creating chances for fun. And I think they fancied themselves on penalties.
Yeah, I mean, the Champions League isn't, you know, it isn't a competition that the best team always wins. It's a competition that the most decisive and the most disciplined team wins more often than not. We saw that last year with, you know, not only were we, you know, going forward, we took all our chances, scored a few long ranges. At the back, for most of that tournament, we were so disciplined. We didn't give teams a sniff. Whereas this year, a couple of lulls, a couple of moments here and there, we just don't quite have that sharpness at the back or that same killer instinct we had up top as last year. We're still playing really well and it's still so good, but those levels we set last year, we're not quite there. And with Madrid's game, you know, how many chances did they have? Two. They scored one. And defensively, all the back line was so disciplined. Even the likes of Nacho, who a lot of people were wanting Haaland to target, had a very solid game. Rudiger was immense over the two legs, and they were just so disciplined. And those were the two qualities that prevailed over this tie, unfortunately.
Lloyd?
Agree with a lot of that, yeah. I mean, look, we did a deep kind of dive and reaction of the game yesterday, which I would recommend people listening to if they haven't had the chance to, or they're interested in what's kind of on the 93-20 player. But I think the last thing I would just want to say to kind of close the book on it really is, to kind of evidence what you said about, I think Madrid were lucky. I went and looked at kind of all the stats after the game. The last shot on target was in the 12th minute. It was Rodrigo's goal.
Like, yeah.
That's crazy. Kind of says it all.
Yeah, No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's where the line for me and the onus becomes on City. We were at home. They did nothing after 10 or 15 minutes into the game. And so we probably will reflect in the weeks gone by. I think certainly in the summer, Pep will look back on that game and have a few regrets in terms of the approach in the build up and also the approach in the game as well. Because even with the argument that Haaland hasn't been at his best, our attacking players weren't great. I think if you look at when we've attacked at our best this season, it probably wasn't that lineup and it probably wasn't those players in those positions. And maybe that's a little bit of a lesson in terms of kind of leaning into what you're good at rather than looking at the opposition and go, well, I need to pick Team X today because we're playing Real Madrid and not Everton. Right. Sorry, Lloyd, were you going to say something?
No. I agree. Let's close the book.
Close the book on that and open the book on something else which is connected to that. And that is the Erling Haaland chat. So I feel as though the criticism of him has reached a little bit of a crescendo in the aftermath to Wednesday, especially amongst Blues. I think that the Roy Keane critique of a few weeks ago kind of began to permeate in and around the media, and I began to see and hear this kind of, you know, creeping talking down of Haaland. And now I feel as though it's landed squarely in the City supporter space. So I was interested in just sort of a little bit of a conversation around where we are with that. How do we feel? I'm going to kick off just by saying, anybody that follows me on Twitter will know how defensive I am of Erling. I'm just not really here for the critique. I think it's wildly misplaced. And I think that if you start chatting about a fella who scored 80 goals in two seasons in a fashion that, you know, he's a League Two striker, or I'd take X amount of money and I'd sell him this summer, or he doesn't fit Pep's system, it's just not something I can particularly get behind. But I appreciate that a lot of people have incredibly different views to me on that particular topic. George, I'm going to kick off with you. Where do you land on the Erling Haaland critique and the season that he's had so far?
I think it's one of these things where when things aren't quite perfect with City, there needs to be a narrative of why that is. They can't just accept that maybe, like, we're just not at the level anymore, and they don't want to maybe give the credit to the likes of maybe Gundo and Mahrez and those players for why we've maybe not quite as sharp as last year. They like to point the blame at someone, and this year in the media, as you say, it's become Haaland. And yeah, I've heard it a lot, but kind of seeping into City fans over the last few weeks. You just hear a whisper of it at the game a few weeks ago, but now the chatter on the way out of the ground, Madrid, a few people, you know, quite, not irate, but they weren't happy with his performance and all these kind of things. For me, I think, you know, it's all an overreaction. I think, has he been perfect this year? No. Could he do more? Yes. But has he also done the job he was brought in to do? That's yes. You know, he's a striker who was brought in to score goals and be like a focal point up top for the team, and he's scored the most goals in the Premier League so far this season. You know, he scored 20 goals in 26 appearances in the league, which is crazy. And I think people just need to just chill on it a little bit is my kind of main takeaway. You know, people are allowed to make a comment here and there if they're not happy with parts of his play, parts of his holding up. Maybe he does need to just be a bit feistier, really. Even if he has to take a yellow here and there, just give it back to a few of these defenders. But he just use his body a bit more. He's got all the skill set there and all the tools needed to be. But in terms of his overall play, I'm happy with it. He's probably the most heavily marked player in the Premier League, and he's still the top scorer. So I think it's one of those things that in 3-4 weeks, hopefully it'll have been forgotten because he'll have scored a bucket load of goals again.
Lloyd, do you buy into the idea that he's not a quote-unquote Pep player?
Not really. I mean, he's not a false nine, is he? But Pep loves Haaland.
Mm.
And he's tried to build the team around him, and we've obviously changed how we play. And Pep is very defensive of Haaland when you see him in press conferences. So, you know, he's not a archetypal, like, Pep footballer, but I don't think he's not a Pep player in any sense. You know, he's the guy who plays up front and gets on the end of stuff, and I think he's the very best in the world at that. Now, I agree with a lot of what George said there. You know, regular listeners to this podcast will know there have been points throughout the season where I've called Haaland out for certain performances, but I just don't think the other night was or should be the crescendo for that. First half away from home in the first leg, yeah, I didn't think he was great. I think he could have put himself about a bit more. Some of the balls didn't stick. But if you look across the two legs, how many big chances does he have? Like, hardly any. I don't think there's a big chance. You know, the one that hits the bar, he does pretty well to get on the end of that. It's, you know, ever so slightly down, that goes in. In the away leg, he has that one chance where the ball kind of is put to him on the left-hand side. The goalkeeper saves it. That's it. So we're not finding him enough at the moment. And yeah, there have been games where I think it's absolutely fair to be critical of Haaland, but I also think it's pretty clear that he's carrying an injury. You know, he asking to go off is not very Haaland. He's played as much as he can whilst he's been at City. If anyone's watched the documentary, they'll see how much kind of physio he gets to get into games. So, you know, I don't think you can question his desire. So I think him going off the other night is probably a nod to the fact that this foot injury is still giving him some grief.
Mm. It's funny that, because I agree. I think that part of what's a difficult thing to have a conversation around is just how fit he is, because it has looked like he's been carrying something, but unless Pep says it, or he says it, then we can't really know. But I guess that I'm reminded of the fact that none of us really knew that De Bruyne played practically a third of the season with three quarters of a hamstring last year, and effectively just went, I'm going to figure it out, and we're going to manage it, and I'll play the games. And I think that, in fact, I'll ask you, George, if he is carrying a knock, and he has played the amount of football that he has played, is that a testament to how much Pep believes in him and how much Pep thinks the team needs him?
Definitely. Pep only, I think, will put players on the line if he thinks he needs them to get over the line. He knew probably last year that without De Bruyne, we might not win the league, we might not win the Champions League, and we might not win the FA Cup. You know, all those trophies were all on the line so late into the season. And I know there's a narrative because he came off in the final. A few, you know, rival fans like to paint of De Bruyne, but that's just a clueless opinion. Like, he drove De Bruyne was a big reason to drive us to those trophies. You know, all the big moments of last season, and you know, Pep's probably looking at Haaland this year, saying, you know, he's such a difference maker, and you know, when he's in stride, not many people can get anywhere near him. So if he has been risking him, then yeah, it shows how much Pep does believe in him. Because I think if Pep didn't believe in him, it'd be a perfect excuse to kind of bring him out of the side for a bit. So mm-hmm. Pep can play maybe with false nine for a bit, or he can play with Alvarez and all that kind of stuff. So I think Pep believes in him, and his goal record, even this season, if he is carrying injury, it's still ridiculous. You know, he's already on what, Total for City, he's scored 83 goals. He's 17 off 100 goals, and he's not even finished his second season. it's like, it takes mere mortals, you know, like De Bruyne, who is, you know, not striker, but he's an attacking midfielder who takes set pieces. It's taken him from 2015 to 2024 to get to 100 City goals. So the fact Haaland's on 83, And, you know, this season he scored 31 goals. It's crazy. And one of the main pieces of the puzzle for me is he's not getting the service. If he was getting the service and all the stuff on a plate and people were finding him through balls left, right and centre, crosses that are perfect for him or in zones that he can go for, then yeah, the criticism would be very valid because he wouldn't be taking the chances that the team's built to give to him. But when we're not, I think you've got to look more at the system as a whole and the fact that Pep still doesn't quite know what his best team yet is this season is maybe the main reason Haaland's not as sharp this year as he was last.
Lloyd, I'm going to let you have the last word before I kick the can forward.
Yeah, so I mean, like earlier in the season, we were finding Haaland and he did miss a lot of chances. And, you know, there were certain big games where we came down on the wrong side of it because he couldn't finish his dinner. You know, Liverpool at home, Spurs at home, Chelsea at home. You know, there's a few examples, but not many of them have been recently. And like George says, you know, if there's games coming up where Haaland missed lots of chances, then I'll be very happy to sit on this podcast and criticize him. But, you know, when we're being critical about improving his hold-up play, you know, that's even, you know, even though I think some of that was valid for the first Madrid leg, like we're kind of picking at straws there, really. The problem is that we're not getting him on the end of stuff. That's the crucial thing. So, yeah, the conversation being as relevant as it is after the other night when I thought actually he played generally very well is just silly.
Okay. All right. I'm glad I'm not the only one. I did fear yesterday that maybe I'm falling into a little bit of a minority in my belief in Erling. And also just I think as a wider point, I definitely feel as though we a little bit lose sight of how young he is because of the hype that came with the signing. And I think one of the things that we haven't really given a lot of consideration to that I think you need to is this is the first time in Haaland's career that he probably is looking at his game going, I'm not that guy. And I think that finding out that he's human, having spent the last 4 or 5 years feeling like he is a robot and a machine and he can literally do anything, I think in the medium term, it will make him a better player because I think you need to know where your limits are to know where you need to improve. And I feel as though that's what this season will give him, which is why I feel so defensive of him and why I find so much of the critique around him to just be a bit reactive and reductive. Okay, so pushing it forward, all three of the title contenders are now out of Europe. Lloyd, how does this affect the title race and who does it benefit?
Well, don't think it necessarily benefits anyone, really. We all got knocked out in different ways. I think City are top of the losers pile though, if that makes sense, in that I think we will be the least affected by it, whereas I think for Arsenal, because they had such a shock result against Villa and they've been in such good form for the entirety of 2024, you know, it's very deflating for them. And for Liverpool, off the back of the terrible performance against Atalanta, to then draw with United and then, you know, score early, and last night a lot of their fans would have been thinking, here we go, and it just didn't happen at all. It's more damaging for those two, I think. And I said on the spaces that we did before the City game, I kind of want Liverpool to go out rather than have the extra games, because I think at this stage of the season, as much as scheduling and, like, you know, fatigue is important, so is momentum. And you know, those results for those teams, I think particularly Arsenal from a belief perspective and Liverpool from a just running out of gas last season under Klopp, he's about to go perspective, I think it's damaging in both senses. Whereas our players will be pissed for sure. And, you know, I'm hoping for a response tomorrow, but we've been here before. We won it last year. We've responded to to setbacks. I think we're a bit more battle-hardened for this kind of thing, whereas I think for one of those two, I could see a bit of a collapse from here. I'm not 100% sure yet which one it might be.
George?
I'm maybe not as optimistic as Lloyd on how it benefits City. I think a large part of our success in the last few years has been the fact that, because we're such a next game mentality team, that we've never had all the pressure on kind of one competition as much. There's always been kind of, you know, you've got your Premier League game at the weekend, all focus on that. Then as soon as that's over, you've got your midweek Champions League match and that's the focus. Nobody's even, you know, talking about the league for a little bit unless there's something happening with other teams. And all the City focuses on this midweek match. So now we don't have that and that kind of siege mentality, momentum. I'm really interested to see how they respond. Obviously, we are still in the FA Cup. We got that this weekend. So I think I'm really intrigued to see how we respond to that. So that's my only concern with kind of us going out and how that affects us in other competitions. I think for Liverpool, it's a big blow. I think they were really envisioning that almost, you know, with the kind of
quadruple, mate. They were
quadruple. You know, the Dublin party. They were about to have. You know, they were. There was some City talk about, you know, there's the chatter about, oh, are you going to go to the final if we get there? And you do start to get a little carried away, but you never take it up solely for granted. Whereas, you know, the Liverpool, they were speaking about it was a done deal, essentially, in the group stages, they were going to be in Dublin. So that psychological blow of not having that extra game for Klopp and like a trophy, no matter, because for them it's probably like, no matter what happened in the league and stuff, we've got this Europa one, which we're the favourites, we think we're the best team in, so we're going to have a trophy at the end of the season to lift.
And a send-off.
And a send-off, yeah, exactly. So now they don't have that. The pressure is going to be built up so much on their league matches, and we've seen how that pressure's affected them in the last few games. It's not gone the way that they like it to. So I'm very intrigued to see how Liverpool get on. And then Arsenal, I think it will have really deflated them, and they're a very emotional side and a very emotional coaching staff. So if they drop any more points in the next two games, I think they're done.
It's a difficult one, really. I look across all three teams, and I think that it has the potential to have a negative impact on all three of them. Just sticking with City, I agree with you, George, that I'm a little bit curious to see how not having that big European carrot, how that motivates or doesn't motivate the squad in the league games, and also how Guardiola deals with team selections. The truth is that it was a lot easier for him to rotate when we were still in the Champions League quarterfinals and semifinals. It's a lot easier for him to use the whole squad. And so, for example, Mahrez got plenty of league games around the time of the Champions League quarters and semis, and same for Phil. And, you know, just it's different this season in that he's going to have to make choices pretty much on a week-by-week basis. So I'll be interested to see what the team is and how he sort of, just how he approaches it. I think, you know, it's not a new experience, but it's certainly something that they've not had for a couple of years. And so it'll be interesting to see how Pep navigates it and how the rest of them navigate it. On Liverpool and Arsenal, to be honest, I got no idea. Like, I just think that the league is so unforgiving, and I think both of those teams, for different reasons, so unpredictable that it's almost impossible for me to really know how they'll handle it. I feel like we'll know more after this weekend. Lloyd?
Well, just looking at those two games, I think Arsenal are more likely to win, I think, against Wolves. Mm. I think they have shown, to give them credit, a level of metal, particularly in this last 3 or 4 months. I appreciate their arse went against Villa, but you know, you can lose over two legs to Bayern. That is completely fine. Like, obviously they're going to be disappointed, and it sounds like second half they didn't play well in the Allianz, but it's no great shame, is it? Or, you know, problem to get knocked out by Bayern Munich over two legs. I think that they could beat Wolves. Wolves have got, Gary O'Neill's just done a press conference saying some of their key players are out. Neto is not going to be playing. Cunha's out. Juan can only play 45 minutes. Nouri might make the bench. So that they could be a bit depleted. Liverpool away at Fulham, been playing well. Marco Silva's got good record against Klopp recently. Liverpool played on Thursday. I think that's more likely for drop points than the Arsenal game.
Yeah, maybe. I think I agree with you on Marco Silva's record against Liverpool. And, you know, the fact that they're in that funny period. It's not a funny period, but I think that the interesting thing for them is that when they had the injuries they had, there was almost a consistency and the teams kind of picked themselves, and it made it a little bit easier to go game by game because you kind of know more or less who the 11 are going to be. But now suddenly it's like Alisson's back, Trent's back, Salah's there, fit, Jota's back, but they don't really know what their best 11 is anymore. I've seen a lot of criticism of Endo. I've seen a lot of criticism of Nunes, seen some criticism of Van Dijk, seen some criticism of Andy Robertson. I wonder if you can, at this stage of the season, in what is effectively a 5 or 6 game mini league where every game feels like shit or bust, I wonder whether you can just go with, right, this is my 11 now, these are the best 11 that I've got, and I'm just going to stick them on the pitch every game, because he more or less put his best 11 out against Atalanta on Thursday, and they did nothing. Like, and they
see
even,
his comments about Trent after the game.
No, what did he say?
He said Trent was completely fucked. I had to take him off.
What do you mean?
He said this is his first start back. I probably shouldn't have started him, but we had to play him. I had to bring him off because he was blowing. I'm not sure if he can start again at the weekend.
Wow. There you go. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a tricky period. To be honest, I hope Fulham get something out of that game. I would like Liverpool to be removed from this title race conversation sooner rather than later, because I just can't be arsed with any part of what they are. But regular listeners will definitely know that. All right. So before we end part one and we hand over to Howard Hocking to chat to Chelsea fan Dan, Guardiola's leaving in the summer of 2025, according to the Real Madrid mouthpiece at Relevo. Either of you believe it?
I don't want to believe it, that's for sure. I always maybe... I've spoke about it a bit that I envision Pep to extend one more year. I think the decade, I think, you know, 2016 to 2026, it's nice. I think he would like to, you know, get that round number and prove that, you know, managers can't be only successful in short periods of time in the modern game, that he can be like the old guard and be at a team for a decade and dominate for all of that decade. But you never know. Maybe he's knackered. Maybe 2025, there is a possibility, but I'm going to tell myself he's extending until I literally hear it come out of his own mouth. I won't even believe a City press release in the written word. I need to hear it out of Mr. Guardiola's mouth before I believe that, and then just walk about, you know, crying for the rest of that day.
Now. You're going to sound like a scouser if you're not careful. He's only a football manager. Lloyd?
Just a weird place for it to come out of, I think, was my immediate reaction. So, you know, if that had come from Lou Martin, Paul, one of the Barca-based guys, then I'd be a lot more worried than I am. It seems a hell of an exclusive for this Jorge Don...
Let's just call him George to keep it simple.
My Spanish counterpart.
Yeah, exactly.
Your Spanish counterpart, exactly. I mean, look, you know, the line on Pep could be absolutely true. You know, we haven't heard anything really positive to suggest that he will extend from 2025. If, you know, if the club are beginning to think that he won't, then they absolutely need to nail this summer from a transfer perspective. And they also need to have an eye on signing players that aren't just kind of Guardiola players. You know, examples being players like Guardiola to play left back. You know, you'd need to sign, I think, players that are a bit more, you know, just not these like multifunctional kind of, you know, Swiss Army knife players. But the fact that he's got that news, I don't think is true. I imagine the decision probably hasn't been made yet. I've always thought the most likely scenario is that he signs a 1-year extension, does 10 years, and then he F's off. That seems like the most obvious thing, but we don't know, do we? And I don't think anyone really knows.
No, I think that's a little bit, again, I find the sort of, I've found the narrative around Guardiola from almost the day he arrived to be quite interesting. I think that there has been a kind of inherent belief amongst the media in England that he would only do 2 or 3 years and then he would go. And there was this kind of desperation for him to leave at a certain point. And I think that has fed into a little bit of uncertainty among some of the supporters as well, where I don't think they fully trust Pep or kind of his decision-making process. I have a slightly different view I know how he speaks about Cheeky Bagaristain and how important Cheeky is. It has been on his entire career as a coach. And so it just would never do him dirty. I think also, if you look at how much he's in love with City and how much he's embedded at City, I don't think he'd do City dirty. And for me, doing a club dirty is rocking up in May and going, you know what, lads, actually, I'm out of here. I don't want to do this anymore. I think in terms of what his current state of mind is, I actually disagree with you, Lloyd. I think if you go back and look at the press conference that he did immediately after Klopp's announcement, I thought it was massively telling because I little bit expected him to kind of take a sort of tone that was more like, you know what, I get it, I've been here a long time, it's natural, it's normal, you know, I feel fatigue sometimes, I'm not going to be here forever. Do you know what I mean? Like, kind of take it as an opportunity to almost make the bed for your departure. And he seemed to take a very opposite tone in that he was like, you know what, I feel fine, I feel great, as long as I feel like the players are with me and they're behind me, I have no reason to think about stopping. And so it kind of, that immediately, it kind of struck me as something that, knowing Pep the way that I feel as though we've come to know him in the years that he's been at City, I think if he didn't feel like that, he wouldn't have said that. I think that he's not somebody who's going to be calculated enough to go, well, I know that Klopp's leaving, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure that this doesn't turn into a City story by saying I'm totally fine. I think that if he, for whatever reason, was feeling fatigue, he'd have just said, I'm also feeling fatigued. It doesn't mean I'm leaving this summer or next summer, but I feel tired right now. It's what being at a club for a long time can do for you. And the fact that he went nowhere near that and was so upbeat about how he feels, it really gave me the sense that there's another contract renewal in the offing. And to be honest with you, I remember tweeting when Pep said it, somebody needs to put a contract in front of him straight away, because when he's in that sort of mood, you want to capture it and go, come on, Pep, if you're feeling so fresh, let's get another 2 years signed up for. But just to sort of, for the sake of indulging the fear-mongering, when Pep and Cheeky decide to leave, if they do indeed decide to leave together, how confident do you feel that Khaldun, Soriano, the board of directors, how confident do you feel that they can succession plan well? And how much fear do you have about maybe people not wanting the job because people don't want to follow Pep? George?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I'm fairly confident in their succession planning. I think Khaldun is a very, very, you know, decisive operator. And I think the pathway he laid out for us to grow from 2008 and, you know, all the way to the present day. Obviously, not every signing's come off and there's been a few hiccups here and there. But the managers we had were all right at the right time, all came in. There was obviously a build-up to Pep. But I think they are very, you know, they're very smart business people. They'd be foolish to not, in one corner of their mind, start thinking about the post-Pep world at City. And they'll have a plan. What that plan is, who knows? But I don't know if we'll ever achieve this kind of level of success in our lifetimes again that we've seen under Pep. But I'm fairly confident in the club's ability to position us to be able to compete for trophies every year in the absence of Pep as well.
Lloyd, is there any, how do I put this politely? Is there any positive or benefit to a kind of cultural reset that moves the coach and the sporting director? Only insofar as, if you think about Bjerkestein and his previous relationship with Guardiola. So Bjerkestein came in, and when Pep was appointed, the plan to put the squad together for Pep had already begun. And part of what made Pep's job so easy throughout the process was the fact that him and Bjerkestein were so well connected and knew each other so well that there was very little friction between the two of them in terms of the ebb and flow of the squad. And so therefore you have that sort of harmony, the kind of, you know, the holisticness of the entire organization feels very harmonious. Now, if Guardiola goes and a new coach comes in who is different to Guardiola in the way that he wants to build the squad or the way that he views football, is there some benefit in having a sporting director who is closer aligned with the new coach rather than having Cheeky be there still?
That's a really well put together argument, but I really want Cheeky to stick around for at least a year or two when Pep goes. I think he is evidently one of the best in the business. I think you've seen by Liverpool's struggles to bring someone in post-Michael Edwards, these guys that kind of do the director of football, technical director role are very, very few. And yeah, okay, it'd be great if a new guy came in and he had symmetry with whoever that was, but without knowing who that is, it's impossible to say. So I would much rather we keep Cheeky for a year or two when Pep goes.
Yeah, I think that's obviously the ideal. But I do slightly disagree with you. I do think my point is a valid one, and I do think that there is some merit in that idea that if you're gonna lose a coach like Guardiola, and you've had this kind of almost a decade of the success that you've had basically being Pep and Cheeky hand in hand. I think unless the next guy is a Pep clone, I can see some merit in going, all right, you know what? We're going to bring a fresh pair of eyes and a fresh pair of ears into the sporting director role. Because I think also a little bit that role can be overplayed in terms of what it actually is. Like, look, all Bjerkestein is doing is presenting options to the kind of transfer committee, if you want to call it that, and then whichever player they end up deciding on, having those conversations and having those connections and having that sort of, you know, relationship, whether it be with Jorge Mendes or with, you know,
yeah, it's a relationships job.
Yeah,
that's one of the keys to that job, clearly.
Totally. And I think that there's... I have a very different view, even in... I think Cheeky's done an incredible job, but I think he's been massively aided by the fact that he has had the best football coach on the planet. And he brought him in, but he's had him coaching the players. And that has allowed Cheeky a little bit more rope to get shit wrong, because you can get shit wrong, because you've got Pep, and Pep can then figure it out after you get something wrong. But it would be,
you can avoid signing left backs, right?
Yeah, but it's also like, I've for a while now, I've had a little bit of an ambivalent relationship with the idea that City are the best transfer club on the planet, that like we are the model for how, where and why you should sign players. I think, you know, we make mistakes like every other football club. I think the difference in terms of our mistake making and other clubs' mistake making has generally been Pep. It's been the fact that, you know, you sign Calvin Phillips to back Rodri up, doesn't work, and Pep goes, all right, well, I'll run the legs off Rodri and we'll win everything. It's fine. You sign Benjamin Mendy, who does his ACL, and Guardiola goes, all right, fine. Well, I'll figure it out. I'll turn Zinchenko into a left back. They give him Nunes and Kovacic to replace Gundo and Gundo. And he goes, yeah, I don't really fancy either of these fellas, so I'll just figure it out with the other lads that I've got. I think Pep's been quite good at figuring out when a transfer has gone wrong or a bad injury has turned up. I don't think it's been so perfect that I think Pep's irreplaceable. I don't think Bagaristein's irreplaceable. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Right.
Yeah.
Time is gone.
No, that's very fair.
Okay. Time has defeated us. This is Mr. Howard Hocking chatting to Dan, and then we'll be right back to chat about the Chelsea semi-final.
I'm delighted to be joined by Chelsea fan Dan Richards. Good afternoon, Dan. How are you?
Afternoon, Howard. Yeah, all good, thanks. Probably not feeling quite as down in the dumps as you might be or the other pod members, but yeah, I'm all good.
Yeah, I should note it's Thursday lunchtime, yeah. So, yeah, you're probably in a better mood right now than me, perhaps, and I've got a review to do in about an hour's time. So, but hey, it's cup football, is it not? So it is what it is. I just hate penalties so much. Penalty shootouts. So
it's a very cruel game, yeah. But hey ho.
It is, yeah. So let's divert to Chelsea, shall we?
please no.
Yeah. As we've spoken, I don't know if it's once or twice this season, but two draws, of course, in the league. Since we last spoke, has anything changed at Chelsea, or is it the same old crazy ride that you kind of explained last time we spoke?
I mean, I'd say in the period since we spoke, which I think was mid-Feb, just before the City game, at the Etihad, it's probably been our most consistent sort of run of the season. We haven't been beaten in the league. I mean, I think we've only been beaten in the league once this calendar year, and since that City game, we've been unbeaten. As well, the only loss in our last 12 has been that sort of extra time sort of calamity against Liverpool in the League Cup. So relative to the rest of our season, I'd say it's been a pretty good period. We're slowly, in terms of improvement, definitely seeing an improvement in most of our forward players. The likes of Nicholas Jackson, obviously Cole Palmer was already playing at a very high level, but at the same time we've been kind of hampered by some poor defensive displays. Like we've had these impressive wins against Newcastle and most recently Everton 6-0 and the Manchester United comeback. But then we've also had embarrassing draws against the likes of Burnley and Sheffield United, where we've been in winning positions and then sort of found a way to draw the game 2-2. So it's been a mixed bag, but an improved period from some sort of earlier in the season, I'd say.
Okay. Yeah, there's been that Sheffield United game and stuff like that. It's like, it's hard to know
exactly
if there's an improvement from the outside. Does it feel like that Pochettino is sorting things out, or does it feel like he's beginning to understand what his best 11 is? The Chelsea fans' view of him as well, is it improving? So,
I mean, the Chelsea fans' view, like any football fan, it's completely dependent on results. So it can kind of switch. The level of recency bias is just ridiculous. It literally swings from week to week. I have tried to remain relatively positive about him throughout the season. And I do think generally, considering the hand he's been dealt, he's doing a decent job. I mean, obviously all clubs have injuries, but the amount of talent that we've been unable to use this season in terms of, you know, the new signings like Nkunku, yeah, or Romeo Lavia, or last season,
I forgot you signed him. Yeah.
Wesley Fofana as well. I mean, that's a spine of a team right there, and he's had to sort of adapt on the job. And while obviously what Cole, and I'm sure we'll go on to talk about him, what Cole Palmer's doing is incredible, I think Poch never really gets any credit for creating that sort of environment where both him and other young players can thrive and feel confident to do their stuff. So I'm pretty positive about Poch's general trajectory. And the bottom line is we already have, I think, 23 more goals and 3 more points than we did in the entirety of last season. And we've still got 7 games to play. So it's the bottom line is it's improvement. Whether the fans will back him into next season is another question, but I personally would.
Would the owners back him into next season?
I think so. I mean, just in terms of the market for managers at the moment, it's so, even if they did want to change, it's so difficult when Liverpool, yeah, you know, Bayern Munich, potentially Manchester United, although hopefully that'll be Gareth Southgate going there.
Please.
You know, all looking for managers. So I don't really know where Chelsea would feature in that sort of pecking order. I imagine quite low given how the club have performed in the last 2 years. So I think the club will take the view, if you can't improve on the current situation, why would you change your manager? And that's where I would also lay my thoughts. So I'd be surprised, dependent on what happens in the remainder of the season, I'd be surprised if he wasn't the manager in August for the start of next season.
Just look to the league table. You're 3 points behind United with a game in hand and better goal difference.
That is true.
Is there something, I mean, that's not saying much really, comparing it to United, damning with faint praise, but if you go ahead of them, is there something to play for in the league now? I mean, do you want to be in a Conference League / Europa League, or?
I mean,
the latter one, maybe, definitely.
I think that we obviously always would want to qualify for Europe. And unfortunately, it would be the Europa League or perhaps the Conference League this season, but you want to finish as high as you can. I think there's the recent results, particularly the late comeback against United and the win against Everton, have really sort of rescued the remainder of our season, because we really didn't want a situation like last year where we were sort of drifting, so far adrift where the league games became pretty inconsequential. Whereas there is a certain, you know, prestige in finishing above Manchester United, however much of a basket case they are, and Newcastle United as well, I include in that. So yeah, definitely something to play for in the league, and of course, yeah, Saturday as well.
Yeah, that 6-0 win over Everton probably doesn't tell us that much, but first up, we'll talk about the star of the show in that game in a minute, as unfortunately we must. What on earth was going on with that penalty?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that has driven the fans, you know, furious in because I think if you're not watching Chelsea closely, this is not only the second time this has happened, or the third time, this is actually the fourth time this season.
Really?
There's been, yeah, so wow. it's sort of the first, I think, against Arsenal in October, there was sort of Raheem Sterling trying to sort of argue his way into taking the penalty above Palmer, and I think that's, you know, fair enough at the time. He'd only just arrived at the club and was new to taking pens. But then the same thing happened in the cup game. Sterling managed to get the ball off him against Leicester, missed the penalty. And then actually, if you watch back the United comeback when Chelsea won a penalty to make it 3-3, you had Nonny Madueke arguing again to take the penalty off to Cole Palmer. And it's ridiculous that you're going to, especially in that game, when you're 3-2 down and you're trying to get back in like a really important game, the top six side, you're adding an additional layer of pressure to sort of, you know, get the ball to even take the penalty for Cole. So yeah, it's, I think it's definitely a sign of the immaturity and the youth of some of the, you know, most of the squad. But it's given Pochettino an opportunity to come out and basically, you know, confirm that Cole Palmer is the penalty taker now, so hopefully that should put it to bed. But we had a situation before where he said initially there was no official penalty taker, and that is always going to lead to players, you know, if it's supposed to be on vibes and who's in the best moment, then, you know, there might be multiple players who feel like they want to take the penalty. So I'm happy in a way that it's happened in such a big way, because Poch has been forced to lay down the law essentially and say that, you know, confirm Cole is the taker.
Well, he punished either two in selection this weekend, or is it all put to bed now and closed, do you think?
I think that is unlikely, just from Pochettino's general temperament as a sort of vibes man. He kind of prefers the arm around the shoulder rather than the sort of the Ten Hag method of sort of send him to the under 21. So I'd be surprised. But yeah, and to be honest, given how Madueke and Jackson are playing, it would be damaging for us to have to, you know, enforce them to both sit out the game on Saturday. So I hope that's the end of it. I hope it's been dealt with internally. But yeah, it was, I can't pretend it wasn't very embarrassing on Monday night with the whole of Twitter and the whole of, when you're the only game on sort of a Monday night, you best not have an embarrassing moment like that, because everyone will be talking about it.
Especially when the game itself is going so well. Why create a negativity? But yeah, Cole Palmer then, is he still surprising you with his impact?
Well, I mean, this is the third time you've asked me about Palmer.
I know.
in the pod. But I mean,
sorry, I've got a bad memory, so I won't remember that.
No, but
that
I mean,
before.
He is the talking point. He is the talking point. He's the man. And you do run out of superlatives for him at this point. I mean, I would have found it unbelievable that at this point in the season, he has 20 league goals, 9 assists. It's just that the numbers he's putting out are just quite ridiculous. I mean, he's joint top goal for goals, and he's joint top with Ollie Watkins on 29 for combined assists and goals in the league. So it's quite incredible. I mean, that first goal on Monday evening, just, I think that was my favourite he scored. Just the impudence of the nutmeg on Jared Branthwaite, I think, just to probably remove him from the plane to Germany, and then the 1-2 with Jackson, and that, just that audacious, like, impressive first time finish. It's not normal to see a 21-year-old doing these things, you know, making the current England number one look, you know, like an embarrassment on the night. So I mean, yeah, that's a whole other conversation.
Well, yeah, that is a whole different conversation to be had. I think the different way to approach this, as I probably, I've had a feeling I probably had mentioned him to you before, seeing he's been doing it since he arrived at Chelsea, was, in a way, it has been a deal that's ultimately best for all parties. Because if he had stayed at City, and he did want to, despite what other people, the media have said, I think he was, devastated to leave, But even if he was a rag as a kid, is that if he had stayed at City, we wouldn't have seen the same season, would we? Because he wouldn't have had as many appearances, and he wouldn't have been given that free role. So, yeah, it's annoying for me, because I really hated the move at the time it happened. So I didn't think he'd be this big an impact, of course, but it not really surprised me. But ultimately, even as a City fan, you've got to say, well, it's worked for him, so in a way we should be happy.
And I guess you could ask the question, would we have seen this version of Palmer under Pep? I feel like in a much more kind of regimented tactical system, you might not even see the best out of him, or you'd see a slightly different version of him. So I think you're right. I think it's worked out for both parties, especially Cole himself, because he's on fire.
The key question though is, how will Gareth Southgate ruin him? DM.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of how, yeah, I think Southgate's likely been tearing out his hair game after game, just because every goal Cole scores or every performance he puts in, he now knows he's going to be forced into bringing in another attacker in the squad. I mean, I guess it depends on whether UEFA expand the squad sizes from 23 to 26, but it's a real selection headache. I personally think, knowing Southgate, and despite Saka having been in my view relatively poor form this year, I still think he'll keep picking him.
Yeah.
I think tactically, I'm not sure if you're assuming Foden playing on the left, which is where he's mainly been used by Southgate. I know Lloyd prefers him through the middle.
We all do,
but
yeah.
We all do. But I think it would likely be a Foden, Kane, Saka front three, and arguably a Foden, Kane, Palmer front three is probably lacking a bit of dynamism, like an out and out winger with ability to sort of get in behind. So I think Southgate is unlikely to start him, but potentially, yeah, we'll see him coming on, making an impact off the bench in Germany.
Because as City fans, you try, like any football fan, to concentrate on the football itself, but off the field, City have got a certain thing hanging over them. Chelsea, off the field, things seem as crazy as ever. Is it a distraction for Chelsea fans as well? Any more hotels to sell? The PSR, basically, that Stefan goes on a lot about being a potential issue, and you might have to sell, obviously, Gallagher maybe in the summer.
Yeah.
Is it things Chelsea fans talk about, or is it more about the football?
I think I'm a bit of a nerd, so I tend to, I've been reading through the Swiss Rambles analysis of the accounts, but I doubt most people are. I think definitely fans are more focused on the football. I think there's a general kind of feeling that the way the club's being managed is a little bit rash, a little bit. There's no way of avoiding it. That was an awful set of accounts released on Saturday by pretty much every metric, whether it be apart from revenue, but wages, the operating loss. But I think while there has been a lot of noise, you have to point out that Chelsea are compliant with PSR at the moment, and that is for most fans the bottom line. They are, through some creative accounting, in keeping with the Premier League's rules. And in terms of next year, I just have faith, given what's happened with this hotel sort of incident. It's made me more confident that these private equity guys who basically run the club, the Clear Lake guys, balancing the books does seem to be their strong suit. And I just think they're going to have their ducks in a row again with compliance, whether that be more creative counting tricks or, like you say, player sales. I've got my gut feeling now is that they're going to have their ducks in a row and manage to be compliant by hook or by crook.
Yeah, find a cruise liner to sell to the parent company.
Yeah, we'll have some more assets somewhere on the Stamford Bridge site that we can move from one holding company to another. But
to Saturday then, this state the blindingly obvious. I said this is important to Chelsea, but in a way, more important to Chelsea than to City.
I'm
just like now, because my thoughts, this morning was just like, we've got to win the league now.
Yeah.
We've got to win the league now. That's it. It's like my eggs are all in that basket. So not that I'm saying Saturday don't matter, but my thoughts immediately went, come on, let's win the league and it's a good season. But for Chelsea, different. Yeah.
Do you feel, just before I go into Chelsea, do you feel that the result last night I imagine it would make this more important relatively to how it would have been seen if you had won against Madrid yesterday?
No, I think less, weirdly. That's precisely a question I'm going to ask on the review we do. So I've put it in my own notes to ask Lloyd and Asan. And I think the extra time has just played with my mind in a way. It's like, yeah, maybe if we'd just gone out 2-0 in 90 minutes and it hadn't been a very intense game, just a dull one, my mindset would be very different. Now I'm thinking, we'll have to rotate. I mean, Kevin De Bruyne and Haaland has to be taken off because they were so knackered. I think Akanji picked up a knock. There'll be others that'll be knackered. Of course, there's no time between the games. It completely changed my mindset to looking at the Brighton game next week and making that a priority. Of course, there's still plenty that didn't start. Like, obviously Oscar Bob, Rico Lewis, Ortega can come in net. Not that, you know, you need to rest keepers generally. Ake might be back, and Alvarez and Haaland could play. Well, I don't know about Haaland. They're still players, actually. But no, I think that extra time kind of changed my mindset in a way.
Yeah,
the big question is how the players see it. I've seen Asan say on Twitter today that they might all want to play, but you can't risk injuries now, because for me, the league's the big one. So I don't want us to throw this one, but it has happened before. We've had badly timed semi-finals, and we've gone out to like the likes of Arsenal with poor performances because we were fighting on multiple fronts, and it was the FA Cup that paid the price. So
yeah,
it's weird. Yeah, I'm a bit conflicted in a way. By Saturday, I'm sure I'll be back up for it. But
yeah,
I'm thinking about that. That Brighton game's more important in a way to me next week.
That's an interesting. I didn't think of that. I mean, that is an interesting way of looking at it. Just obviously, yeah, you're now that 30 minutes more in the legs that you might want to preserve for you know, more important things. I mean, I guess from Chelsea's point of view, like you said, it's very important to us given what happened against Liverpool in particular. I'm sure the players will be keen to sort of put that right and have success at Wembley after sort of freezing effectively in extra time.
Well, Lloyd sent a question. That's one of his two questions. He wanted to know if you might bottle the game a la the Liverpool final.
I mean,
sounds like he's winding you up there.
He's winding me up. I think generally we do play better when the expectation is off us and the pressure is off us. And if you're saying City, you know, you're going to be playing the likes of Ortega, you know, Nunes, Oscar Bob, I mean, there'll be more expectation for Chelsea to turn up and do something, which hasn't really gone well for us, particularly, you know, in the Liverpool game. You're playing against kids, you're playing against, you know, a number of Liverpool Academy products who are, you know, in there, barely played a game between them, and the mental flakiness of this side was just on display. Like we literally crumbled. So it's hard to say, to be honest, Howard, but yeah, I would hope we'll have learned from that, and we have the momentum from Monday night of, you know, smashing Everton, and I'm sure Poch is desperate to win and something in English football, you know, an FA Cup. So yeah, there's a lot riding on it for us, and I'd say overall, definitely more riding on it for us than for City.
Well, Lloyd has also allegedly that he sent you our expected 11 with all those changes in.
I'm looking at it. Yeah,
that might still beat Chelsea. So what's it, have you got the 11 he's predicted then?
I've got it in front of me. Yes, he's got. I think it's Stat City who's put this out, but it's Ortega, Lewis, Diaz, Stones, Ake is the back four, then Kovacic, Nunes, Bernardo Silva in midfield, and then Oscar Bob, Alvarez and Doku. I mean, that's still a strong side from my point of view. I know Nunes hasn't performed well this season, but you know, there's a lot of players that can do damage in that team. And you're talking about a Chelsea side who, you know, the only consistent thing is inconsistency. We failed to beat a 10-man Burnley over, you know, in 45 minutes. Didn't turn up against Sheffield United. So I mean, it's no, but by no means, you know, a guarantee that we'll put a good performance against that team.
Just look at bookies odds. See, a huge favourites for this. Which stunned me. I mean, if it's a standalone game at a different time of the season and we had a fully fit squad and blah, 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 I'd be like, well, fair enough, you know. But we have, anyway, other times of season, played out two draws this season. He's going to have to rotate big time. The players that play both might be knackered. I'm surprised there's that bigger discrepancy. I'm not saying Chelsea should be favourites, but I'd say it's a lot more 50-50 than perhaps you might have viewed a couple of weeks ago. So I find those odds staggering, to be honest. So
yeah, that is interesting. I mean, I think it just speaks to, again, just the lack of mental fortitude in this team, and maybe that's reflected in the betting markets. But yeah, we'll see.
Or they'd like to cover the back with City, perhaps. Yeah. So do you have, they seem to be the for Chelsea the strongest lineup possible? Do you have an 11 in mind, similar to the Everton lineup? Or?
Yeah, it's quite tough at the time of recording. So Thursday morning, early afternoon.
Yeah,
we don't really know the current status of quite a few players. So I think Enzo Fernandez, for example, is a big doubt. He has a hernia issue that he may need surgery for. I mean, some people would say that we played very well on Monday without Enzo Fernandez. I would say that, to temper that, you know, it's okay playing with Paisedo and Gallagher against Everton, but, you know, City are a very different proposition. So I think he'll try and keep the same team, which will, but I think I'm going to work on the assumption that Enzo will be fit. So that would be Petrovic, Malagusto, Chalobah, Thiago Silva, Cucurella. So another different back four combination, but one that kept a clean sheet on Monday, our first clean sheet since January. So probably don't want to change that. And then Enzo, Caicedo, Gallagher as the three. And then I think he'll go with Palmer, Nico Jackson, and then Mikhailo Mudryk on the left.
Not a bad side, really, is it?
It's not a bad side, but we always say that.
It's the Chelsea conundrum, you know, how do you see the game playing out then? Do you think it'll be as chaotic as that Liverpool one? Or do you think that would benefit Chelsea to have a chaotic game?
If we think back to the last game in Feb, that sort of Chelsea set out to be quite pragmatic and well organised in that one. We seeded a lot of possession to City. I think you had about 79% of the ball. But we sort of, we had this well-organized press led by Gallagher, sort of hunting in packs, really. And then trying to create turnovers, which did work. If you remember that Sterling goal and a couple other opportunities. But then in the second half, became a bit of a siege. It was quite inevitable that I think Rodri would get that equalizer and potentially City would even go on to win that one. I don't think this game will be that similar. Partly because, I mean, of the expected rotation City will need to make. And secondly, I just think, given it's in a neutral setting, there'll be an expectation that Chelsea will have a bit more of the ball, take the game to City a bit more. And that could even play into City's hands with the likes of Doku and Bob on the transition. So, yeah, it's hard to say, but I expect a more of an even game in terms of possession than in Feb. The score prediction, I think you were going to ask me. It's so hard to predict.
Yeah. It is, yeah. Go your head or your heart, it's up to you. That's what I always say.
Yeah, I'm going to say 1-1 in normal time. And then I think, and bearing in mind, you know, I'm assuming the likes of KDB, Haaland, you know, your big hitters, Rodri, I expect them, if the game is in balance, to maybe come on sort of late into the second half and into extra time if it does go to extra time. So I would go in with my head, and I predicted a City win every time and we've got a draw, so it's worked well for me in the past. I'm going to say 2-1 in extra time to City.
All right. Well, I'm going to go 1-1 and 2-1 to Chelsea after extra time. I think if Kevin De Bruyne was feeling anything, then he's not getting anywhere near that pitch at any point.
Fair enough, with the league in mind.
If they've asked, I don't know if they're feeling niggles or they were knackered or both, so, but if they felt anything, any niggle, then not a chance they'll be risked. So, yeah, it's impossible to predict, is it not? So, yeah.
We will see.
Yeah. Right, time has defeated us, as always. Could have talked for a lot longer. Dan, thank you very much for taking the time out to speak to us. And after this weekend, all the best for the rest of the season.
Cheers, Howard, to you as well. Thank you.
Yeah, cheers. All right, and we'll go back to the panel now to preview the big game at Wembley.
That was Howard chatting to Dan. And now I am going to do a quick preview of the semi-final against Chelsea. Lloyd, going to start with you. A lot of Cole Palmer chat everywhere. A lot of Cole Palmer chat. In a very simple way, does his success bother you at Chelsea?
No. I'm on your team with this. I'm happy for him. I wanted City to keep him. I think he'd have played quite a lot this season, but the reality is he would never have become the player that he is right now if he'd have stayed at City. And it is a little frustrating to see him have that success, but for me, it's not kind of that. It's not tinged for me. Like, he's been brilliant for them, and when he scores, like, I still smile a bit, to be honest. The fact that he came out and said he's a rag is good, because I've known that for ages, and that's been the word. It's good to hear it. Good to hear it directly from him. And I've got a lot of time for him. Like, you know, he's just a bit of a like likely lad, and he's a proper Manc boy. And you've got to give him his dues. I mean, the guy's been outstanding this season. He has completely hauled Chelsea through what has been a mess of a season for them. Some of the goals have been ridiculous. The one the other night where he megs Bramthwaite and then puts it in the bottom corner. I mean, that's a really high level goal. That's the kind of stuff that, you know, De Bruyne has done down the years for City. So, and that's high praise. I'm concerned about him at the weekend, because he's evidently their best player, and he's already shown in the two games against us that he has no fear or qualms with playing against City, or no. You know, he's not perturbed by the occasion. In fact, Palmer's shown this season, you know, he's been cold Palmer, hasn't he? He's unflappable, scored all his pens, he stepped up in all the big moments for Chelsea. So yeah, I'm a bit shook about the weekend, because he's been brilliant. But am I arsed at him doing really well for Chelsea? No.
George, are you arsed?
No, I'm very much, you know, same as you guys. I'm happy for the lad. He's a product of, you know, the City Academy, and he's showing, you know, how all the great work that's gone into City's, you know, youth structure over the last few years, you know, and he's a product of that. And it's great to see him scoring, not against City, but against everybody else. He's had an incredible season. You know, if he'd said when they first signed him that he was probably likely to go to the Euros with England in the summer, everybody would have looked to you quite strangely. But now that's, you know, more than a possibility. It's probably going to happen. So I'm just a little sad every now and then about it as well. Just like the what if of it all. If, you know, there'd been some maybe better communication from both camps at the start of the season, you know, could we have seen this in a City shirt? But when I think about it more rationally and take the emotion out of it, I don't think we would have. I think he's been given, essentially under Pochettino, a free role in a team with players that aren't as good as him more often than not. And so he shines very brightly, and he's, you know, he dictates their attack. He takes all the penners, and he wouldn't have that same role at City. So it wouldn't have mattered if we kept him. He would not be playing or performing in the manner he is now for us, because the role he would be playing is completely, completely different.
Yeah.
So I wish him success at Chelsea, and I hope he goes to the Euros for England, because I think he will feature. But I just do not want him to play well on Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. I think I hope he does well in every Chelsea game he plays, except for the games that he plays against City. And you know, I just think it's something it's not only about now. In the future, we're going to have to get used to this. The academy is really, really good, and City can only have X amount of players that will be good enough to play for City, or will have the space to be able to develop at City. There'll be plenty more Cole Palmers who are good enough who just go, you know what, lads, I'm not waiting 3 years, I'm out of here. And that's perfectly fine, because the players in front of them will be world class. Like, I think one of the big Palmer things for me has always been, he's not as good as Phil Foden. And he knew that. And he probably knew there's no way I'm getting in ahead of Phil. And so it would have taken Pep moving Phil central fast, giving Cole the right wing fast, for it to become a thing. And that was always going to be a very challenging thing. And that's even before Doku came in. I think after Doku came in, I was like, all right, it's completely understandable that if he's got an offer, particularly if it's a club like Chelsea, where you'd think that he would go, all right, I'm going to take that. Lloyd, how do we approach tomorrow? Like, obviously we're coming off the back of extra time in midweek. I've seen a lot of very rotated teams do the round. Unfortunately, Pep's press conference is pretty late today, so we don't know where we are with fitness. But what's your gut feeling on how he approaches the team?
It's really tough because we don't know, and all we're going off without any quotes is how the players looked in the game against Madrid. And, you know, I'm gonna kind of stand by what I said on the review, which is that I think there's certain players that just won't be able to play at the weekend. I think those are Walker, De Bruyne, Akanji maybe. I think maybe Haaland might be able to play, but again, we just don't know if he's carrying this foot injury or not. So it's really tough. I thought Rodri wouldn't play immediately after the game, but I've come around on that. I think Rodri will want to play. And, you know, now that we're out, he'll be pushing to go for it. Guys like Bernardo, I mean, he ran 16 kilometres the other night. That's insane. Maybe Bernardo doesn't play, but in a way, I'd be happy with that because I think we just need a bit more spice in attack. Doku needs to start. I would like to see Bob play. I think Lewis will come in. So if it's tough, maybe it's not as rotated as I think, but like I do think there are those three or four players that just probably won't be able to start so soon. I mean, we're talking less than 72 hours between the games.
Okay. I know you need to run, Lloyd. So before you go, just very quickly, has the Champions League's exit made this game feel more important for you?
Yeah, I think it has.
Okay.
I'm a big believer in having momentum at this point in the season. I appreciate that, you know, it's extra games, etc. But the final is at the end of the season anyway. So we've got to play tomorrow irrespective. So I absolutely want to win. And winning breeds confidence. It breeds momentum. And to be honest, after the games this season, we owe Chelsea one. We seriously owe Chelsea one. So
definitely,
I'm keen for us to deal with them. My confidence entirely rests on what the team is come Saturday 5 o'clock, because I think that will be very instructive. The motivation will be there 100% from the players, but there might be some tired legs. So I think that it will have to be rotated a little bit. But let's see.
George, do you think that in terms of the sort of, to me, it feels like a very difficult game to preview simply because we don't know the fitness level. So you don't know what sort of team you're dealing with going into the game, which is weird when you consider that it's semi-final. But from your point of view, what players would you definitely like to see starting? And what sort of strength of team do you think that City need to put out to win?
I think we need to put out a slightly rotated side to win, not a fully rotated side. I think Chelsea, just from a mindset perspective, I think you need a bit, like you say, you need some of the players who are playing midweek because they're so brilliant players, and also because they want to put a marker down and, you know, get back on the horse, as it were, with a win. And some players really do feed off that. But you've also got to rest some of those tired legs. Like the running stats for City were a joke. You know, some of the players, the amount of work they were doing off the ball. So I think there's a few players I definitely want to see. I think Doku to start, I think, is maybe an obvious one. I know he did feature in the week, but from the bench, I think he's deserved a start. Then I would also like to see Oscar Bob start this game. I know, you know, some people may not think he's ready for semi-final. I think he is. I think you need to give him, you know, a real stage to prove. You know, he doesn't need to prove it because he's already shown it this year, but, you know, for him to put a marker down. But the real tricky point for me is the back line, the defence. I cannot piece together a slightly rotated back line with also having important players in there who will make a difference. Have you got any idea who you want to see at the back?
I mean, I'm sort of leaning towards Kyle Walker's bionic, right? Because yeah, he's come back from a muscle injury and he's done the entirety of of the Madrid game and the extra time. And it just kind of makes me feel like maybe Walker just ends up starting.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No, that wouldn't shock me. I would love to see Stones come back in.
Yeah, I think him coming on and looking okay was a positive sign last night. He obviously wasn't ready to start. I think he would have started if he was, but the fact he didn't pick up anything back on the face of it is a positive for us.
Yeah, and then I think you can go with Ake and Gvardiol, or you can put Diaz in again and go with Diaz and Gvardiol or Diaz and Ake. I do think it'll end up being something like that.
No Rico?
I mean, no, not a right back.
No.
No, not for me. I think it'd be a mistake, bearing in mind that they've got Modric on that side, right?
With the pace, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm a fan of that. I think you're asking for something there that you don't necessarily want. So no, I don't think that I'd play Rico in the back line. Now, in midfield, right? You might be able to twist my arm into getting Rico Lewis into that side, but actually, my gut feeling... So I'm going to give you what I think Guardiola's going to do in front of the back four, and then you can tell me how mad or not mad I am. So I think that Rodri plays. I think it'll be Rodri and Kovacic. And then I think in front of them, it'll be Doku, Bob, Grealish, and Haaland as the nine. Now, I'm a little bit torn on Haaland Alvarez. I think I'd lean a bit more towards Alvarez if he'd have shown anything in extra time, but it just didn't really do anything. Do you know what I mean? It kind of left me with that feeling of like, all right, well, what are you actually offering then? Because this is, you know, everybody here has played 90 minutes of football and you're the freshest lad, more or less, on the pitch from a City perspective. He looked like he was goosed after 7 minutes. So it's a bit like, yeah, I'm not sure. So my gut tells me that Haaland plays again, but I don't know if Haaland is fit. Obviously, if he's injured, if his foot is bad, then I'd rather rest him for the Brighton game. So where do you land on that front sort of 3-2-6 that I've just picked?
It is a possibility. I suppose with that, it's where do Grealish and Bob line up? You know, Doku will probably be on the wings, one of the wings. And then do you put Doku on the right, Grealish left, Bob playing centrally, or do you put Grealish as one of the eights? It's a thing that a lot of people are kind of calling for, but Guardiola's up till this point has been fairly reluctant to do it, really. I would like to see that. The Grealish playing more centrally at the weekend. I think it's the game for it, and I think he's got the capabilities to do it. But I think it's a possibility. I do just think Alvarez is going to start on Saturday. If that's instead of Haaland or with Haaland in playing kind of one of those central roles with De Bruyne on the bench and Alvarez kind of in behind, which I know, you know, people of this parish are not very fond of, and most of the fan base isn't very fond of. But I think it's just I'd be shocked if Alvarez isn't playing tomorrow.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. I would love for it to be Oscar Bob, but I guess that Pep has shown that for whatever reason he really loves a little bit of Julian running around, doing a lot of running. So I guess you're probably right there. But it's an interesting one, because then if Rodri doesn't play, so what, Kovacic, Nunez, Alvarez?
You can't play that, can you?
I mean, you kind of, it's an FA Cup semi-final and you've just gone out of the Champions League. I'm not sure that I'm in love with that as a midfield three. I think you need Rodri in there. So that would be my feeling on that one. Same question for you. Has the Champions League's exit made it feel more important, this game?
Yeah, definitely. The fact that they're also the same week, you know, if you get dumped out of two competitions in 1 week, that's a lot to come back from, especially when, you know, we're now leading the pack in the title race and, you know, we've gone from the hunter to the hunted, as it were, and a lot of pressure started to build up then on the league matches. Winning this will just, you know, it'll be, you know, it won't people won't forget the Champions League exit, but it'll be a, you know, it'll be a hard pass on it. And, you know, I think people would then start to believe the double is, you know, it's possible. So I think it's a massively important game and already, but the exit's made it, it's up the ante for me. I think there'll be a bit more pressure on it. And I think if we had won on Wednesday and gone through, I think we'd see a very heavily rotated side tomorrow. But now we've lost, I think, like you say, I think a few players maybe who would have got a rest, like Rodri, I think he now will be playing.
Mm.
So yeah, that's a very, you know, a ranty way of saying that, yeah, it's made it more important for me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think you can't underestimate the players themselves. I think that going out in the fashion in which they ended up going out on Wednesday night, I think that with barring injury, you kind of look at the players and you go, and you think about the players' point of view as well. The league game isn't until Thursday against Brighton. So
yeah,
you've got plenty of time to recover. And I wonder, just from a professional pride point of view, how many of them go, nah, I want to play on Saturday. Agassi, Rodri, Diaz, Eddie, Walker, Erling. I think I just don't think his legs are going to be able to hack it. I think that we have to accept the fact that Kev's minutes are going to have to be managed.
Yeah.
But I think he would be the one where you'd be worried
if he was playing, like you say, just that hamstring muscle injuries at his age when explosiveness is such a part of his game, you would be worried. But yeah, I agree. The rest of them, I think they'll all be dead up for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Last question. Are we going to do it? Are we getting to the FA Cup final?
We are. We're going to get to the FA Cup final for an all sky blue clash against Coventry.
I like it. Well, I share your optimism. I think what Lloyd said is true. I think we do owe Chelsea a little bit. So I can absolutely see a scenario where we go there and we do enough just to get over the line, which is going to be the most important thing. Right. George, thank you very much, sir. That was excellent.
Cheers, Asan. Have a belter of a weekend.
You too. To everybody who listened, thanks for listening. Have a lovely weekend. Be safe, be well. And as always, up the Blues.